KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. High Valyrian may well be an invented language from the hit TV series Game of Thrones, but there are more than a million fans trying to learn it.
If the day comes when you must find me again, just give that coin to any man from Braavos and say these words to him. Vala Morghulis.
Vala Morghulis.
Coming up, we talk with experts about how most effectively to pick up a new language, fictional or real, and we'll hear whether language apps can help, and we'll find out why being bilingual might actually make you smarter, among other benefits, and that's all next, after this. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Online language learning programs like Duolingo, Babbel, and Rosetta Stone all claim to teach you a foreign language in record time. But do they deliver what they promise? Well, in this hour, we're going to get tips from experts on how best to pick up a foreign language, something Americans need. And we'll also hear how foreign language fluency can affect our worldview and bring us closer to our own heritage. Joining us here in studio is Rick Kern. He's director of the Berkeley Language Center, professor of French at UC Berkeley. Welcome.
Glad to be here, Michael.
Glad to have you. We also have online with us Viorica Marion. She's professor of communication sciences and disorders at Northwestern University. Welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And we also welcome Mary Kahn. He's a science writer and author of Four Words for a Friend, Why Using More Than One Language Matters Now More Than Ever. Welcome, Mary Kahn.
Hi.
Hi to you. And let me begin with you, if I may. Let's just go right to the heart of this. Why learn another language, particularly when we hear all about how English is a global language, we have all this translation technology, one language should suffice, many say.
Yeah, if all you want to do is order a cab or make a reservation in a hotel, that's fine. But having a language inside your head is very, very different. It enables you to understand the world from other people's perspectives. It also, I think, really importantly, it gives you an understanding of your own thought processes. Because once you start to get into another language, once you start, it starts to become part of you, you begin to be aware that languages don't map onto each other neatly, that words aren't exact analogs of each other in different languages. Russian is not English in some fiendish code. And once you start to realize that, you realize other words are always possible, and you start to reflect on the way that you think and communicate. You understand yourself better as well as understanding others better.
Well, that all makes a great deal of sense, but I'm struck by your subtitle, Why Using More Than One Language Matters Now More Than Ever. Why now more than ever?
Because of the way the world's going. I started writing working on this book several years ago, because I just had this awful feeling of doom. From wherever one looked, it seemed as though people were becoming more suspicious of each other, less open to each other, more fearful of each other, more suspicious. And it struck me that if you can make languages work together within one person, within one family, within one home, within one community, well, maybe that's quite a good way to start counteracting this rising tide of suspicion and anger and fear.
And Mary Kahn is a science writer. His book is called Four Words for a Friend, Why Using More Than One Language Matters Now More Than Ever. And let me bring Viorica Marion into this conversation. She's professor of communication sciences and disorders at Northwestern. And you do a lot of study about the brain in learning languages, and there really is a brain enhancement, especially for what we call the executive function in the brain. Let's talk about that. I mean, just in terms of learning a language.
Sure. So just like any type of experience, whether it's music, whether it's another language, our brain is highly plastic. So using another language can change the function and sometimes the structure of the brain as well. One of the most striking outcomes of being bilingual or multilingual is a delayed onset of dementia and Alzheimer's in older individuals. So if you speak another language, you will be diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's likely 4 to 6 years later than if you're monolingual, in part because you functionally compensate for the structural changes in your brain. Your experience of juggling multiple languages simultaneously all the time throughout life improves your executive function, or at least translates to this ability to mitigate some of the cognitive declines associated with dementia later in life.
Well, it's always been an assumption that you learn a language better and faster earlier in life, but that's not necessarily the case.
There is some there is some evidence that learning another language early in life is easier. However, one can learn another language at any age. So whereas we used to think that there is this critical period, the critical period hypothesis was that before puberty, one was much better at learning another language. As it turns out, we can learn a language at any point. The difference would be having an accent, usually. If you do learn another language later in life, after your articulatory system has already been set to your native language, you're more likely to have an accent throughout life. But as far as your vocabulary size and being able to communicate effectively in another language, that can be acquired at any age.
And with us in studio is Rick Kern. He directs the Berkeley Language Center and is professor of French at UC Berkeley. I was thinking, Rick, before we went on the air, about how Samuel Beckett wrote Waiting for Godot in French, in Attendant and Godot, although that was not his native language. His native language, of course, was English. And many great writers wrote in languages that weren't their own. Sometimes, I mean, Joseph Conrad, Vladimir Nabokov. Sometimes one can get a sense of more control by using a language that is not your native language, no?
Yeah, I think it opens up a lot of doors to creativity, ways of thinking, as Merrick was talking about, that are quite different from the ways of thinking that you have in your native language. There's a lot of baggage that goes along with your native language, and when you have gone through the process of learning another language and partaking in another culture, it leads you to new ways of thinking, and I think that that contributes to the creative process as well.
Well, the old way of learning a language was memorization. You know, I used to go in the language lab and hear these tapes over and over again. People still use tapes, but we've got all these new things out there, the Rosetta Stone and Duolingo and Babbel and Memrise and so forth, and they advertise as if, you know, they are going to make you fluent somehow very quickly. Let's get your thoughts about
it. Yeah. Well, I was interested in your setup that you mentioned, pick up a language. And I think that that goes along with the pitch of these apps. I think, you know, basically these are great things for people to have and to work with and to provide a limited exposure to the language. But if you're going to really learn the language in terms of being linguistically, culturally proficient, they're most likely not going to get you there. And if they were able to develop a long-term path for these programs, it would take an awfully long time.
Well, maybe we should talk about fluency. When some think about fluency, they think about speech, but others think about writing and reading. And actually, within a language, there are changes going on all the time, idiomatically, and, you know,
can
barely keep up with them. And there are many languages within a language. You know, people talk about the scientific language, and they talk about the language of cooking and so forth within different languages. So what do you think when you think of fluency? What does that include?
Well, I think in terms of, rather than fluency, proficiency. And the fact of the matter is none of us is proficient in all domains of our language. And that's, you know, when we go to college and graduate school, we get educated in new fields and we pick up new ways of using language. And it's an ongoing process. I still consider myself a learner of English as well as other languages that I speak. So I don't see it as a process that ends at puberty or adolescence, but is really a lifelong adventure.
Well, there's an old joke that says if you speak or are fluent in three languages, you're trilingual, two, you're bilingual, one, you're an American. And somehow that seems to have a good deal of impact, particularly, in fact, let me go to you on this, Merrick Kahn. The Modern Language Association put out a study that said that there are 651 foreign language programs right here across the country in colleges that have been shut down, French being at the head of the pack here with 129, Spanish being next with 118. And there are some other alarming statistics that I just want to get your response to, and we'll get all of you professors to respond to this, because there's a kind of language deficiency here in the United States. You got 20% of students, according to the Pew study that was done on this, from kindergarten to 12, studying a foreign language. That's compared to 92% in Europe. I mean, these are really vast gaps we're talking about. Comment from you, Marikon?
Well, I'm sitting here in England, and we have exactly the same angst about it, to use a German word. Languages are going out of fashion like nobody's business in British schools. And there seem to be a number of problems here. One of the main ones is, and I don't know whether this is mirrored in the United States, but certainly if we compare English-speaking students with ones in other European countries, a survey recently recorded that the English students were the least keen on studying other languages. And there are many different reasons for that. Some of them are complicated and political, and I guess we won't get into those. But
excuse me, English meaning not only here but across the pond where you are.
Yeah. The English students really didn't like studying French or German or Spanish or whatever. And their levels of dislike were a lot higher than those of their peers in other European countries. And strikes me that one of the main reasons for this is that for people who natively speak other languages, French or German or whatever, English to them is something that has really positive associations. You know, like for a lot of them, I mean, half the songs that they love the most, you know, the movies that they enjoyed the most. Are all in English. So English is something that has really, that arouses warm feelings in them. It's something that they want to draw close to, whereas for native English speakers, another language is something that at best they feel they ought to learn.
And we find out sometimes, Rick Hearn, that people actually learn the language, a foreign language, by watching a lot of movies or a lot of television. People have told me, immigrants have told me, listening to this program, they picked up a lot of ways of speaking English.
No, that's true. And one of the things that we've had great success with at the Berklee Language Center, a project developed by my colleague Mark Kaiser, is a film clip database that allows you to zero in on particular things that you would like to learn. You can search for vocabulary, grammar structures, speech functions, and so forth, and have direct access to film clips that will demonstrate the use of those structures, vocabulary, cultural notions in feature films. But I think that more broadly, texts in general, whether it's literature, theater, songs, these are all of the things that are happening on the internet globally. These are all great sources of language learning.
Via Rica, Marion, isn't the best way just interpersonal and learning to use the language face-to-face with people who are fluent in it?
The end goal, hopefully, is always to be able to use that language actively with someone. But, of course, the apps that exist online now, the TV programs, any other way that is available to one is a good place to start. There is not a lot of research on the relative efficiency and success of the different apps at this point. This is still a very new area for learning another language, but they seem to work. For some people, some apps are better. For others, other apps are better, and other ways of starting on this journey can be one should choose whatever seems to work best for them. But eventually, you do want to engage with someone and interact with someone. Maybe it's a coffee date with a person who speaks that language. Maybe it's traveling to that country. Maybe it's dating someone who speaks that language. There are multiple ways to use a language to eventually attain the fluency that you have discussed earlier.
Well, what do you make out of 1.2 million people wanting to learn Valyrian, which is a language on Game of Thrones, or for that matter, all these people who become fluent in Klingon, which is the language in Star Trek?
Well, those
doesn't seem to have much practical value. I mean, I'm sorry to put it quite bluntly, but yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There is a community, so it does have social value because it allows you to engage with other like-minded people who share your values or share the things that you appreciate in culture. That's always been the case. People would use Esperanto or would create communities and niches where another language can be used. And in fact, learning an artificial language can follow the same patterns and give you some similar advantages to learning a natural language. In fact, a lot of research is done on artificial languages because they allow you to very carefully control different variables. But in the end, an artificial language, we don't yet know to what extent it changes one's worldview or changes how one sees the world and thinks about the world. Natural language, in fact, does that. So there is quite a bit of evidence showing that speaking multiple languages can change how one sees the world, literally, how eyes move when you look around the world, changes the thought process, changes decision-making, changes memory, one's self-control. You mentioned earlier Nabokov and Waiting for Godot. If you read Nabokov in two languages, for example, his autobiography, it reads very differently. It draws attention to very different aspects of one's life. I've seen Waiting for Godot in three languages, Romanian, Russian, and English, and each of them was different in a subtle but meaningful way. So a natural language can actually change one's thought process in ways that are unpredictable if you're only monolingual or speak only one language.
Well, let's talk with you, Professor Marion, about the best way to learn a language, or maybe you can give us some tips about enhancing fluency, because right now there are only 10 states and D.C. where a high school graduation includes a foreign language requirement, which is, frankly, of concern to many people and maybe to others appalling. But best way to learn a language, is it in the classroom, or is it, you know, just through, again, watching TV and listening and trying to speak it with others?
To a large extent, it depends on the age one is learning another language, a child versus an adult. In general, the quantity and quality of input is what will predict success the best long term. I think as long as one engages in actively learning another language, you can't go wrong, whether it's in a classroom, whether it's by traveling to another country, whether it's at home with parents. Those are all good ways to learn another language. It is unfortunate that the United States is currently cutting languages and arts and music and lots of other programs that are important in raising a well-rounded person. So as far as policy goes, it is very much directed by local guidelines and by state guidelines. There is no universal national mandate as far as learning another language, but the United States is becoming an increasingly diverse and multilingual society. Already now, more than one-fifth of American households speaks a language other than English at home, and those numbers are growing. So in spite of this resistance, the change in the demographics of this country is clearly leading us to a more diverse and multilingual society, which is also the case outside the United States. Bilinguals and multilinguals are, in fact, the norm. It is very common in countries all over the world to grow up with two or more languages and then acquire additional languages later in life. So bilingualism, multilingualism is the norm, and bilinguals and multilinguals are the majority of the world population.
But not here in the United States, clearly. America.
Yeah, not yet.
Let me go back to you, if I may. Some serious tips about the best way to learn a foreign language from you?
Well, the vital thing that I speak from my own experience in recovering, not a foreign language, but my first language, which is Polish, is that you have to have people to talk to, and you need things to talk about. So, and what that actually means, it relates to why people speak Valyrian. Exactly. It's about being part of a community. And if you can find people that you have things in common with and you have something that you want to communicate and share with them, then your chances of making progress are increased. Another, I think, a great asset is this idea of this of feelings. You know, if you have a language around you when you're really young, it becomes part of that rich embedding of emotions that you emerge from infancy and into later life with. And if you can actually attach some feelings, for example, by associating a language with favorite songs, as I mentioned earlier, if you can get feelings attached to a language that you're trying to engage with in later life, then your relationship with it will probably flourish better. If you want a very specific tip, though, this is my personal tip, select original language subtitles when you're watching a foreign language movie on TV or on a DVD. So don't select English language or whatever it is, subtitles, but select the ones of the language in which the movie is being played. And that's a really good dual mode way of checking your performance and making you feel confident in what you're hearing.
And let me go to Professor Kern, who's here with us in studio, who directs Berkeley Language Center and is professor of French at UC Berkeley. There's a study that was put out by the Foreign Service Institute, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Rick. It's they have four tiers of language learning. Mm-hmm. And what they say essentially is, and we're talking about Americans now and English speakers, it's much more, how shall I put this? It's easiest to learn languages like French, which you teach.
That's right.
And that's opposed to the four tiers. You get down to the fourth tier. The hardest languages are like Arabic, Chinese, Korean, Japanese.
That's
so
right.
Forth.
Yeah. 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 And but I should point out that the easiest group doesn't mean that it's a quick process.
480 hours they have come up with that
figure.
And to
get to advanced level proficiency, they estimate 720 contact hours. So we're talking a long period of time.
It's like a part-time job.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, that's the thing to keep in mind is that when you're talking about learning a language, that you can learn for all different purposes. And for some purposes, you don't need to develop, you know, high-level proficiency. For other reasons, you do. And I think that it's an important distinction. But if you're trying to develop really extensive proficiency and familiarity with the culture, it's a very quick it's not a quick process. And that's one thing of concern with study abroad programs. There's been a trend towards shorter and shorter study abroad. The students who go for a full year are in the distinct minority these days, and it's largely summer programs for 4 to 6 weeks, which is sort of a, you know, they check off that they've done study abroad, but it's not a necessarily a productive experience of study abroad.
Well, it appears that languages not only make you smarter from what we're hearing here, learning a foreign language, but also increase, maybe even increase your intelligence, increase your brain, as we heard from Professor Marion, brain power, executive power, executive function, may even have something to do with increasing your EQ, your emotional intelligence, because you are more sensitive and more responsive to different cultures and you get imprinted in that way. And let's hear from you, our listeners, especially hear from those of you who have learned a foreign language and learned it well, and what maybe tips you have, but what questions you have about language learning. This hour we're devoting to that, and we can bring you aboard. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Please feel free to be part of the program. Again, the number to call, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. When we return, we'll hear from you. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about how to learn a foreign language most effectively, and it is often compared to learning how to ride a bike, but it doesn't quite pan out that way because often, you know, like you say, you don't use it, you lose it, and the reality is that language fluency has a lot to do with really practicing and using the language. And a listener tweets, any counsel for us Westerners learning Asian and tonal language? They seem so daunting. Some thoughts from you, Rick Kern?
Well, these are among the most difficult languages for an English speaker to learn. I think one of the key things, as Merrick was saying, was to get into a social context where you see and experience the language and it is being addressed to you as welcoming you as a member to this community and seeing how it is that the language is being used around you and with you. That is, I think, the really key thing. And then once you have a sense of how the language is being used in a social context, then to focus on the details of the tones and distinctions that are being made. The problem with some of these apps is they start off with the tones without any kind of context. And so you're making auditory discrimination distinctions, but it's not clear what for.
And again, Rick Kern is director of the Berkeley Language Center, professor of French at UC Berkeley. And let's go to your calls, and let's begin, Aaron, with you. You're on the air. Good morning.
Aaron? Hi, thanks for checking. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, thanks so much. I love this program. I studied Spanish at UC Berkeley. I majored in comparative literature and minored in Spanish literature. Studied abroad in Spain for a year in Salamanca. Took classes with Spaniards, lived with Spaniards. It was one of the most important decisions of my life. And so I really appreciate your talking about this, and I share your I sort of lament as well the fact that fewer students are studying abroad for a year. I have a quick comment and a question. My comment is, I don't think it was mentioned, but one thing I found to be really valuable, and I know the Spaniards I did it with found to be really valuable, was what we called an intercambio, or an exchange, where you just meet every week over coffee and you sort of swap languages. You talk in English and then you talk in Spanish, so you each get the practice. Of course, living with Spaniards in an apartment was significantly more beneficial, but I found that intercambio was really helpful to everybody. And you could do that in the United States as well, arrange to meet with someone who's trying to learn English and you practice both their language and your language. My question is, Les was discussed about the value of reading in another language. I learned to read Spanish well before I really learned to converse in it well, and I love reading in Spanish, and I learned a lot of the grammar that I had never learned in English. I learned in Spanish and started seeing how it applied in English, but also really loved studying poetry in Spanish and seeing sort of the different ways that Spanish works in poetry in a way that English does not. So my question is about what's the value of reading? I know it doesn't always translate into being able to then speak it, but in terms of forming some of those that intelligence that you were discussing, and whether it's a path to then learning to be conversant in the language.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Aaron. I was just saying off air to Rick Kern how I had to learn French for a PhD, but learned how to read it, and I still can't really speak it and would love to be able to speak it. Let's talk about that connection, Villarica, Marion, I mean, between reading and learning it in terms of speech.
Well, for sure, words can have a magic to them, and you can notice that magic often when you learn to read, and you can see the connections between different languages, and you can see how languages may share a root or may share structure with another language that you know, or with an older language. Learning to read in another language helps establish those connections between the word form and the meaning of the word. So even though the pronunciation might come later, you are already making significant progress in learning another language and making those connections and getting those neurons to fire together when they see a word in another language and in accessing its meaning. So it's a wonderful step along the way to acquisition of another language, for sure.
And he was also speaking about studying Spanish en cambio, that is, learning it with others. And Professor Kahn, let me go to you on this. I was also just thinking about traveling in different countries where Spanish is spoken and being able to communicate very well. But when I went to Argentina, I found serious difficulties because the language, it's not only idiomatically different, it also has strong strains of French and it has strong strains of Italian. And it's almost in some ways like a different language. Like you go to Quebec, you're not speaking the French that you learn perhaps from these apps or from school and so forth. There's a gap there, isn't there? American?
Well, I must disclaim the rank. Doctor is fine, but I'm not a professor. I think reading, the value of reading is to address the comment and the question is the value of reading is reading itself. I mean, one is, after all, entering into a language community by reading, and entering into the culture that goes with it, in the same way that one enters into communities and cultures by reading in one's familiar languages. And I think it's also very, very important to value each mode of language use of, in itself. In other words, you know, you are using, I talk about using more than one language. I don't talk about speaking or reading or writing. I talk about using because I think it's important to value all these different modes for what they are. And of course...
excuse me, you're not using Polish very much, though, living in England, are you?
I use Polish every day. I read in Polish every day. I at the moment I'm reading quite a lot of Polish material for research into something I'm working on.
No, that's great, but you have to keep up with it, don't you?
I do, and something that I do, and I think this is actually another significant point, is that I communicate in Polish by email. Don't undervalue writing. One is communicating, one is using the language, even though one's not speaking it out loud. And, you know, this can be immensely personally valuable. I mean, for example, if you have a close friend or if you have relatives in other countries who don't speak, they speak your most familiar language, then you may not be in touch with them terribly much, but just those few exchanges that you do have huge value to both of you.
But what about what I was saying? I'm sorry, Professor Marion.
Allow me to clarify that, in fact, one of the advantages or one of the benefits of knowing another language is that you can see benefits from it even when you don't actively use another language. So let me explain. The mere fact that one knows another language is already influences how your brain functions. Because right now, as I speak to you in English and you listen to me in English, all the other languages that you may know have to be controlled by your inhibitory control mechanism. So you have to inhibit your Polish or your Portuguese or your Spanish or whatever other languages, Romanian, you may know in order to use English. So even when you're not using another language, your bilingualism gives your brain this workout that doesn't come, I can't think of any other cognitive skill that works in the same way, that constantly engages your cognitive control and executive function mechanism. So one doesn't, in fact, have to use another language actively every day to see the benefits of bilingualism, which is particularly exciting and interesting. Just the mere fact that you've studied or used another language can already have positive outcomes. And in fact, there is research showing that just one semester abroad or one semester of studying of another language can already show positive benefits.
I've got a lot of callers, and I want to get to as many as we can. But let me get back to the question I asked before to you, Rick Kern, and that is, I'm fairly fluent in Spanish, but when I went to Argentina, it was like a different language because there were so many idiomatic changes and so forth. You have to always account for that, don't you?
Sure. And this is the issue is that what we learn in school programs is the standardized form of the language that academies have decided that is going to stand for the incredible variety.
Yeah, like you're learning Spanish, you're learning Castilian, right?
Throughout the world, I mean, when you take any language, there's going to be tremendous variation, not only community to community, but also just within your daily use of the language as you shift registers.
It can be daunting. Let me bring some more callers aboard, and let me go next to a caller in San Jose, Anahita. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to share a personal experience on the topic of learning more than one language and the benefits of it. My native speaking language is Farsi, and then I picked up English living here, and then I spent a semester in France. And to my own surprise, I picked up French fairly quickly in that one semester. So it was definitely beneficial, and I wanted to get your speaker's thoughts on the same topic for kids. I have an eight-month-old son that we're thinking of putting in a daycare that the lady speaks Nepalese, and even though we don't speak Nepalese at home or we're not familiar at all, do you think there is a benefit prior to going to school to have a full Nepalese daycare or a foreign language daycare, even though the child may not really practice that language later on?
What do you think, Mayor Khan?
I think exposure to different languages early in life is a good thing. It's not a confusing thing, as many parents still appear to believe. It may not have visible effects later on, but I think it probably helps a child to be aware of languages and there is research on this, I think it helps young children to be to concentrate on other people more, if you like, to listen to them, to be aware of the differences between them, because they have to work out who's speaking what language and how to respond to each particular individual. So I think very, very good socially, whether or not it has a linguistic benefit later on.
Let me thank the caller and move right along to another caller, and that's you, Serena. Join us. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question was, I live in California, and I was a prod to the public schools, and in public school we learned grammar. The kids today aren't being taught grammar in school, and for me, learning three other languages, the grammar base of English really helped me. So I'm just sort of wondering how much of a foundation, like the grammar structure in your native language, is important in learning another language.
It's a good question. Viorica Marion.
Oh, it's definitely important. And the interesting thing, just like the previous call also talked about, with each language, it becomes easier to learn additional languages. So once you learn the grammar of one language, there are fewer new rules to learn of a second language, and then even fewer rules for a third language. You can think of this a little bit as a Venn diagram. It helps you reason abstractly about language. You have this metalinguistic ability to really understand how to play with words and linguistic structures. So yes, grammar is important. It helps to have explicit instruction in the grammatical rules of another language, but we are also... Our brains are also very good at picking up statistical probabilities and picking up grammar patterns just by using the language every day.
I'm going to read a few comments that are coming in. Noel writes, I saw a new Pew Research poll that showed 40% of white Republicans polled would be bothered some or a lot when they hear a foreign language spoken in public. 18% of white Democrats would be similarly bothered. You're over in England, Maricon, but you want to comment on that? What's your response is?
Yeah. It's probably quite similar here, I would guess. I saw a tweet earlier today from somebody who in the United States who was responding to this and talking about an incident in which a law enforcement officer demanded ID because he'd heard people speaking Spanish in an area where Spanish wasn't widely spoken, and she commented that people wouldn't object to tourists speaking white tourists speaking European languages. Well, all I can say is that it sounds like where that person lives is considerably more tolerant than my country, the United Kingdom, seems to be. We have incident after incident of language vigilantes turning around to people and saying, we speak English in this country, and sometimes doing more than telling them off in a passive-aggressive way, but sometimes actually attacking them. There seems to be this very deep-seated belief that if foreigners, as they're conceived, are in this country, then they need to act as though they're not foreign, that people have to conform to it, to a monolingual norm, rather than letting people to mind their own business, have their own conversations the way they want, and live as though, well, you know, they live in what was supposed to be a free country.
Maricon is a science writer and the author of Four Words for a Friend, Why Using More Than One Language Matters Now More Than Ever. And Marina writes, I took 6 semesters of Spanish about 10 years ago. I have an understanding of the structure of the language, but found and still find conversational comprehension to be very hard. I have thought an immersion program in a Spanish-speaking country would help me. Thoughts? Let's go to you on that, if we could, Professor Kern.
Well, this echoes my own experience learning Spanish in junior high and high school, which was just an academic subject. I learned lots of vocabulary, lots of grammar rules, but it wasn't until I went to Mexico for 3 months as an exchange student my last year of high school that all of a sudden all of this clicked and I was able to use the language in a daily basis, socialize, play music, learn songs, play sports, and this completely changed my attitude about Spanish. I came back super energized about learning Spanish and then other languages as I went to college. But I think that this social dimension, as I was mentioning before, is really crucial in activating all of that knowledge that can be first established through formal study.
Wouldn't you say, though, that there are different abilities where maybe I should go to Villarica Marion on this because it gets to the brain, and that's where she's been studying languages to a great degree, that there are varying degrees of just facility in general with absorbing language and learning language. I mean, some people are very gifted. Pete Buttigieg, for example, who's running for president, mayor of South Bend, Indiana, taught himself seven different languages, and he's fluent in those languages. Some people just have the gift. They pick it up by their ear. Isn't that true, Professor Marion?
It is true that some people have a gift for languages. To some people, languages come easier, to others math, to others music, to others sports. So there is this theory of multiple intelligences that suggests that some people are particularly gifted in a way that others may not be. And that can explain bilingualism and multilingualism for many people, but it doesn't explain national or geographical bilingualism and multilingualism. So, for example, it is not very likely that everyone born in Quebec, where French and English are official languages, are neurally or genetically different from everyone born, a few hundred miles to the south in the United States, where we have mostly a monolingual society. So individual differences certainly contribute to learning another language, but there is more to it than that. Part of it has to do with the fact that it is easier to learn a new language with each additional language, that it is it changes how you inhibit information, it changes what you are able to focus on as you learn another language. So it's a constellation of issues that influences outcomes. The fact that you mentioned a political candidate running for office who speaks more than one language is actually quite interesting, because historically in the United States, up until very recently, all of our presidents did speak or at least study another language and were fluent in, so Churchill, not a president, but if you look at political figures, were fluent in multiple languages as well. And that's still true for presidents of other countries. If you look at Macron, for example, he does speak multiple languages. So that's still the case quite often.
Well, we still have problems with presidents of our country speaking one language, but won't necessarily go there or name names. Villarica Marion, again, is Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Northwestern. A listener tweets, I've been able to improve my French and Chinese by using music. Find a song you like, look up the lyrics, and naturally sing and play it over and over. And we'll go to another caller, and that's you. Don, you're on the air.
Hello, yes. My wife and I moved to Germany shortly after we were married, lived there for 6 years, and we treasure that experience. And a friend of mine who moved there to live with his girlfriend, I told him, avoid English. Just speak German, no matter how poorly. And the other comment is that some people say that having another language, having two languages, is like having two souls. Now, my experience in speaking in other languages, they teach you in language school, don't translate, just speak. So I want to ask your experts there about this question. If you're thinking about some subject, such as politics, and you've got two different people you're speaking to, one is German and one is English, when you go to say something, you select the language to say it in, and then you just say it. Likewise, you switch to the other language. What is the nature of this pre-language cognition before you select a language to say it in?
Yeah, it's an important question. Villarica, Marion, go to you again on this.
Well, that's a really good question. And linguists study the selective mechanism on you before you produce a language extensively. In fact, what's interesting is that the same person can actually think differently and reach different conclusions when using a different language. So you could speak to a bilingual or multilingual. And that's in part because the language you use activates this entire network of memories and experiences and is linked to this rich array of things that you have experienced in that language. And it's quite often the case that your experiences across languages vary in some significant way. So it's not unlikely for one to make a different decision, to think of themselves and of others differently, to express emotion differently across their two languages. So that will really influence what you say, not only in how you say it, but sometimes in the answer itself. There is actually research on things like moral decision-making, ethical decisions, financial decisions, where using, for example, a second language makes one more logical and provides an answer that's more logical and less emotionally laden. But you don't need to look at research. You can look at your own experiences. If you speak another language, and let's say you're in a romantic relationship with someone or you're in a familial situation, and you do often feel a different intensity to the emotion that you express or that someone expresses to you if it is expressed in the same language.
And again, Villarica Marin is professor of communication sciences and disorders at Northwestern University. We're also talking this hour with Rick Kern, who's here with us in studio, who directs the Berkeley Language Center and is professor of French at UC Berkeley, and Merrick Kahn, a science writer and the author of Four Words for Friend, Why Using More Than One Language Matters Now More Than Ever. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me go hear from Jeff next. Jeff, join us. Welcome.
Hi. In the modern world, it seems to me that the only two universal languages are English and math, and that everybody should spend the time, rather than learning a second native language, spend the time learning math, which has essentially all the properties of another language and is really, truly the only universal language.
Any thoughts from any of our guests on that? Math is a universal language? We'll let the comments stand, Jeff. Thank you for that. I'm going to actually read a comment.
I'm happy to comment on that.
All right, go ahead.
I love the question. Math is...
It is a language. It
is a universal language, for sure. And if you consider communicating with other life forms, math could be the way to do it. It is sort of the queen of science, as some might say. But it is misguided to think that math alone can or should replace the richness of the multitude of natural languages that exist around the world and what they can bring to a way of thinking. We're not Vulcan where we're void of emotion in communicating through math and numbers only. The human experience is much richer than that, and math can't really, at this point yet, express the emotional being that is part of our existence.
I'm getting a number of tweets here. I want to read one from Jim, who says, what I haven't heard yet is a career advantage being multilingual gives. Global fluency is, this is a quote, he gives us, the next resume differentiator. And here's a question from Carol. Let me go to you on this, Rick Kern. She says, to me, one of the most difficult aspects of learning a language, such as Spanish or French, is trying to remember which nouns are feminine or masculine and applying the correct adjective there, too. And I can tell you, as somebody who studied Russian, you got neuters thrown in there as well sometimes in studying languages. Thoughts from you, Rick?
Yeah, well, that is something that is relatively trivial when it comes to communication. It's a fine point getting the gender, except in certain cases where a noun can be either feminine or masculine, and that will make a meaningful distinction. But on the whole, those are the kinds of things that can be worked out over time, and it's not the sort of thing that should be the first and foremost preoccupation of the learner, in my view.
Could be a barrier for some, though, I think, as she implied. But let me get another caller aboard, and that's you, Richard. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I had a question about the role of artificial intelligence in language acquisition and language use. I'm thinking about not only learning apps, but also online translators. And I was reminded of some of the work by Hubert Dreyfus on what machines can't do in terms of preserving both intentionality and meaning. And I was curious what your panel might think about that.
Any thoughts from you on this, Merrick Kahn?
Sorry. On artificial language translators... they certainly have an awful long way to go, and I don't know that they understand anything. One thing that I do feel very strongly is that they need to work on the previous issue, which that was raised, which is that of gender. The gender bias built into Google Translate, it goes far, far deeper than what they've actually acknowledged, which is that they tend to default to doctors being male and nurses being female. It's throughout the whole structure of the languages they deal with. So, you know, we're a long way from artificial intelligence actually understanding what it's talking about.
Here's a tweet from Reese, and I'll go to you again, Villarica Marin. Reese writes, I'm a singer who is often required to sing pieces in languages that I do not know. So We are provided with translations of the words. I'm often just pronouncing the syllables. Does doing so have any cognitive benefits?
There isn't a lot of research on that. I can't comment on cognitive benefits, but I'm sure that it increases the richness of auditory input and the repertoire, the production repertoire. So it can't hurt in any cognitive ways. In general, a rich auditory input and the richness of experiences is always beneficial to one's cognitive and intellectual performance.
Well, we'll leave it there because we can end up here by saying that learning another language definitely is beneficial, and hope that maybe this morning has inspired some of you to do just that. I want to thank all our guests. Again, Viorica Marion, Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Northwestern. Good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Merrick Kahn, science writer and author of Four Words for a Friend, Why Using More Than One Language Matters Now More Than Ever. Good to have you with us as well. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed for having me.
And thanks, Rick Kern, here in studio, directs the Berkeley Language Center and is professor of French at UC Berkeley. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Michael.
And thank you to all who serve us behind the scenes daily here. KQED Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Ariana Prale. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. And we get online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Caroline Smith and Sam Klein-Markman. Executive editor is Ethan Lindsay. And chief content officer is Holly Kernan. And I encourage you to continue this discussion online. You can do that at kqed.org/forum. Another hour of Forum up ahead. We're going to meet Nell Friedenberger, and she has a new novel out. Fascinating novel. Stay tuned for that. It's up ahead, along with talk about what's going on right now with what may be indeed a constitutional crisis. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.